Penguin Random House Audio presents The Shape of Darkness by Laura Purcell. Read for you by L. Potter. We together called into being a weird shadow, which was neither of us. Only an unshapen, unformed thing. The ideas crossed each other, as the lines of two wet drawings laid face to face become crossed, blotted, effaced, and unrecognizable. Elizabeth d'Espérance, Shadowland, or Light from the Other Side. Chapter 1. It is the cocked hat that draws her to him, the way it arches above the barricade of toppers. Its golden edges end low to the brow and gild the face beneath. He stands talking with half a dozen other gentlemen under the dying bonfire of Sydney Gardens autumn foliage, impeding the passage of walkers like a clot in the blood. As he extends a hand, emphasizing a point to his nearest companion, Agnes sees it. The perfect pose for a full-length silhouette. She reaches for the scissors in her reticule, but her fingers are cold, fumbling. By the time she has hold of the handles and the sable paper gripped, ready to walk through her hand, the man has already turned and replaced his arm at his side. She will have to cut him from memory. There is the familiar slip in her stomach, the tangle of breath within her breast. Hope refuses to die. Never will she see the dark blue coat of the Royal Navy without a wild belief that somehow. But this man is not Montague. Even through her cataracts, Agnes can see enough of his features to dismiss that fantasy. If John Montague is still alive, and she has no guarantee of that, he will not be a slim, active man engaged in debate, but a seasoned sailor, even older than herself. Decades on deck will have weathered his skin and aged him beyond his years. There may be a paunch beneath his waistcoat, or a limp from a bullet wound. Her dashing lieutenant belongs only to the past. She cuts the outline of his face in smooth, bold waves, sliding the paper between the pad of her thumb and the finger that still bears his ring. The breeze picks up. Her paper flutters, objecting. It has grown damp on the walk and does not hold its form as it should, but Agnes persists. Once she passes the neck, her work becomes easier. Bodies are a different language. Shoulders with epaulettes, the coattails, moving down to the breeches and the lead foot, always cut dead flat. This naval officer must be fresh home. He is not supposed to wear his uniform on furlough. It is a rare sighting, a gift, a glimpse, however tenuous, of a happier time. Wind gusts. The trees cast their treasuries of gold and bronze down upon the men, and an oak leaf, crisp and brown, sticks upright in the rim of the cocked hat. It would be a beautiful detail to include if Agnes had not cut that shape already. She moves on to the final curve, the one she must not rush, even though her knuckles are beginning to cramp, and there. The shade emerges from its background, triumphant. Another puff of wind snatches the waste sable paper and sends it, spiralling, into the leaden sky above. Agnes frowns at her work, dissatisfied. She has overdone the nose and underplayed the chin. This is a nuance people rarely understand about her art. A shadow, an exact replica of the shade a person casts, possesses next to no likeness at all. It must be honed and exaggerated before they will recognize the profile as their own. But she does not have time to make changes. The group of gentlemen are taking their leave. Clouds pillow fast behind the limestone of the old Sydney Hotel. For all her talent, Agnes cannot work in the rain. It is time to return home. She plods these days, a legacy of the accident. Or perhaps she is just getting old. Bath's streets seem harder to navigate, and the soles of her half-boots slip whenever there are cobbles underfoot. Umbrellas sprout, making the crossing at Pulteney Bridge an ordeal of twice its usual bustle. Damp woolen coats press against her. The kennels run fast in the rain, carrying the odours of horse muck and sewage. Surely it never used to be like this. The Bath of Agnes's childhood was a city of palaces. People came for the cure, of course, but they were not all invalids in Merlin chairs back then. The fashionable paraded in the pump room by day and danced in the assembly rooms by night. There was always a play or a concert in some white stone mansion. Now, carbon deposits have stained the buildings, giving them a funereal aspect. Dirt bleeds into the river, into the sky. The soul of Bath has left, and its body is decaying. Only the Somerset Hills glow in the distance, preternaturally vivid. A horsewhip cracks the air. Agnes pulls up short on the edge of the pavement, just in time. A great cart lumbers past, its wheels squeaking, and splashes her skirts. By the time she has reached the Abbey churchyard, the breath is grating painfully in her lungs. Really, it was foolish to wander as far as Sydney Gardens. Barely 2 years have passed since pneumonia nearly claimed her life. She had not been strong even before the fever, but when she became lucid again, she noticed a profound physical change. Her body felt like a stranger's, unwilling to obey her like it used to. "Take it slowly," Simon counsels her. But it seems, at times, that she has taken her whole life slowly, at the sedate pace of a minuet dance. A spell in the wing chair by the fire, reading Varney the Vampire with her nephew Cedric, will fix her. Illness might have left her frail, but she is not beaten yet. The rain spits with malice. Mustering all of her energy, she launches herself across the churchyard and round the bulk of the abbey. Her home cowers in the abbey's shadow, its walls discoloured by time and soot. Ivy-choked pillars support a portico above the front door. Magpies have taken to nesting here, although there is no sign of them at present. All day long they chitter and cackle, disturbing her work, mocking it, as others do, dismissing it as the vestige of a bygone age. But to Agnes, the black paper shapes in her windows still look as beautiful as ever. The conversation pieces she designed to lure the browsing customer, a group of ladies at tea, horses riding to hounds. Then there are the brighter ovals, painted in Etruscan red, spots of vivid colour on this dreary day. She is not the only one to view her work with admiration. As she draws closer, she notices two men standing by her parlour window. One consults his pocket watch and then knocks at the front door. From his manner, it appears that he is not knocking for the first time. "Cannot Mama hear? And where is Cedric? Can he really be out playing in weather like this?" Shaking her head, she scurries forward, determined to reach the visitors before they turn away. A fine artist she will look, panting and half drowned, but she cannot afford to lose even a whiff of business. It is only as the clouds part, letting slip the tiniest ray of light, that she discerns the man rapping on her door is no usual visitor.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?